Hey everyone, welcome to Our Memphis History. I'm Mark White. This episode is all about our veterans. We're honored to have Diane Height on the show. Diane is the founder and president of Forever Young Senior Veterans, a local organization that helps take care of our veterans. They plan trips back to past battlefields, back to Pearl Harbor, Normandy, places like that. You'll hear some more about that on the show. We're also joined by two highly decorated local veterans, Jim Brown and Don Thompson. Their stories are going to captivate you, and I know you can't wait to hear from these heroes. You can read all about them in the show notes, and we'll also have a link to Forever Young's website as well. We're also joined by John Robilio, who's going to host this episode, so let's get straight to it.
Well, I'm very happy to introduce our guest, Diane Height, who is the founder of Forever Young Senior Veterans Organization. I'm also delighted to introduce my very good friend of over 50 years, Don Thompson. And also, Don, of course, was a veteran. And then my very good friend, Jim Brown. Jim, of course, being a combat veteran of Korea and Vietnam. And Don and Jim were both Marines. And so that's important to establish first and foremost.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about Forever Young.
Tonight, we welcome warmly Diane Height, founder of Forever Young Senior Veterans Organization. Diane has the praise, Diane has the admiration of so many veterans that it would take easily 10 minutes to record their greetings, their expressions of goodwill and gratitude. Survivors of the Second World War, Korea and Vietnam, proudly proclaim that her organization, Forever Young Senior Veterans, have changed their lives in a profound and lasting manner. Diane, you have gained the applause of numerous veterans for your tireless efforts on their behalf. Would you address for us the mission and origin of your group?
Sure. Thank you so much, John. I started Forever Young Senior Veterans in 2006. And what we do is we honor World War II, Korea, and Vietnam veterans. I have to just say, I'm madly in love with them all. They have my heart, and I'm a volunteer. I've never taken a salary. I just do this because I want to make a difference in their lives. And really, that was my driving force in the beginning. I thought, we have a group of veterans that they've never asked for anything from our country, and I just wanted to give back to them. And so originally I just wanted to grant individual wishes because I thought this will be really simple, but I didn't realize it was going to turn into something that it has, which is returning them back to where they fought. That was never something that I thought I would do. So that's kind of how it began. Our mission is, let me just tell you our mission. It is to bring honor, healing, and hope to military veterans 65 years and older by granting their unfulfilled dreams, returning them to the places where they fought, and sharing their stories of sacrifice with others.
Diane, thank you. Diane, because we have two veterans, both former members of the U.S. Marine Corps, I thought we could first hear from Jim. Jim, of course, entered the Marine Corps in 1950 under very memorable circumstances. Jim, why don't you go ahead and share the initial months of your career in the Marine Corps?
I'd love to, John. But first, I'd like to make just one comment about Forever Young. I don't think Diane ever realized how much this would grow and how many hearts would be blessed from what she has done. There's just absolutely no way of thanking her for that.
And very good point. Very good point.
She's the best example I've ever known of where you plant a seed and nourish it, what it might turn into.
Total dedication.
Thank you, Jim. Now you see why I'm in love with them.
Okay. I really, to correct you, I joined the Marine Corps in 1948, so I'm a couple of years
I'm
more
two
mature
years in era. Pardon me.
And I had a good experience of serving with the United States Navy as a member of recon on submarines, and was fortunate enough to get sunk on a submarine. So, and the Navy took care of me very well. Then, I don't know how many people realize it, but in the spring of 1950, our government was planning to do away with the United States Marines. And they broke the recon up in March and April of 1950. And some were even given early discharges. And I was assigned to a guard unit in San Diego. And on the Sunday morning of June the 25th, I was going through the squad bay, and gunny sergeant says, "Brown, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to church." He said, "Not today." He says, "You're going to back and pack your sea bag and go back to Camp Pendleton." And I said, "I've already been there." So, anyway, and when, within a week, we was on a ship and headed for Japan. And then next second stop was the Pusan perimeter. I'd like to say something about the U.S. Army. In August the 4th, by the way, my 20th birthday, on July the 18th, 1950, I was cleaning my machine gun on the docks at Pusan. We didn't take our weapons with us, by the way, going into a combat zone because of the Geneva Conference. And but on the 4th of August, 3rd or 4th of August, and I don't remember the dates exactly, we may not have been able to hold the Pusan perimeter had it not been for the 29th of the United States Army, if they hadn't stopped them. They lost so many of their personnel that day and that night that they were known as the Ghost Regiment from there on. And I think that is worth mentioning about the Korean War. The next morning when they were loading the dead and the wounded aboard a hospital train, a young Korean lady was watching. And as she turned around, she says, "I helped too. That was my brother." Then she was kind enough to share with us that the North Koreans had overrun, she was a school teacher, had overrun her school the evening before. She had no idea what would happen to her students and things of this nature. There were many stories of that in that early war of such things. And if you want to know why we're in Afghanistan and Iraq and places like that today, that's exactly why. To stop the human service, show kindness and hope to where there is no hope. Then after the Pusan perimeter, I was lucky enough to make the Incheon landing on September the 15th, 1950. And the thing about that landing, that's the only night landing, amphibious landing, that our country ever made in the evening, because all the others had been in the daytime where they could replenish them before the night came. And we had to land in the evening because of the tide. Another memorable thing for me on that evening, I made that landing on LST 1148. That's the same ship my brother, when he was in the Coast Guard in World War II, commissioned. And they allowed me to be a member of their organization after that. They still have a reunion every other year. From there, we had the liberation of Kippo Airport, Seoul. And then we met up and made the last amphibious landing that our country's made, I think, and that was at Wonsan, and went up to for a very nice wintry vacation at a place called the Chosun Reservoir.
Would you share with our listeners what happened in December of 1950 to your unit and other units in the Marine Corps?
Okay. When we made the Wonsan landing, we thought the Korean War would be over. And we'd made up a little, we'd be home for Christmas. The kids would never miss us. And then and then we had Thanksgiving dinner on November the 23rd. And little did we know that would be our last hot meal we'd have for a long time. But the temperature was very nice. It was about 30 degrees below zero for the snow. And it snowed every night. Then on the 27th of November, we had a rude awakening. The Chinese forces overrun us at about 2 in the morning, and so we had to play a little gunfight there for about 4 hours. Bugles going, automatic weapons, hand grenades, artillery, and it just came one wave right after another. The next morning after it stopped about 5 in the morning, and it got daylight. Why, the ground was just covered with dead people. I had never seen so many. It looked like a log dump where the loggers would cut trees and roll over the hill. And we found out that we were surrounded by, I believe it was 6 divisions of Chinese, over 200,000. And we're probably outnumbered about 20-1, I think, is what the history book said.
20-1.
We held that position. And only, by the way, there was only one road in, 78 miles to the sea at Hamhung. So there was no place to run or escape. And we held our position until really the 30th of November. That's when we got the orders to move out. And our first objective was to get back to Haggerty Ree. If we made that 12 miles, we thought we had a good chance of making it. And all of our supplies and everything had to be dropped in by air. The next morning when we woke up, we could look back to see how far we had come during the night, which wasn't very far. It took us 4 days to do that 12 miles.
Wow.
And as we marched into Haggerty Ree at night, the Marines are a little bit gung-ho sometimes. They fell into uniform formation, or parade formation, we would call it, and marched into Haggerty Ree, singing the Marine Corps hymn, and Amazing Grace. And General Oliver Smith, the division commander and our regimental commander, Colonel Murray, came out in their stock feet and said, "Thanks God, my Marines have made it." And we got a hot meal that night. The next morning, we were loading the dead and the wounded aboard an aircraft. And the Army Chief of Staff came up and says that you only put the wounded aboard. There won't be room for the dead. And General Smith stepped up and says, "That's not so. These men have gone at risking their own life to bring their dead and their wounded out, and they're not about to leave them in this designed hellhole. They go on a plane too, or the planes don't go out." Which was it was a big boost of ego for us. And then the next morning we moved out, and I know that Diane's husband is Air Force veteran. And we all know that Air Forces never make a mistake. But on December the 7th, most people think that's Pearl Harbor Day. But to Marines, it is Tootsie Roll Day. Because the Air Force, instead of dropping us ammunition and a little rations, they dropped us Tootsie Rolls. And you can imagine they were a bunch of very angry Marines, I would say mad. In fact, they used language you'd never hear in a Sunday school class.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Something else they were known for.
Shaking their fist at them so they could hear. And the thing that was so serious about that is we knew that they could only make one run a day.
Oh, no.
Because of the shortness of the day and the weather.
Right.
But to their credit, they made another run that day. And the reason for their error was that the code name for 60-millimeter mortars was Tootsie Rolls, but no one bothered to tell the Air Force about it. And to their credit, they made another run that day.
And Jim, we simply applaud, we commend, we recognize the exceptional bravery of you and your unit, and we're just, I think, Diane, just eternally grateful. I guess that's the best way. We're just eternally grateful. And I think our listeners would like to know again that you were completely surrounded, minus 30 degrees, and you estimated outnumbered 20-1. And miraculously, you lived and you were able to reach, obviously, your ultimate destination. Don, would you share us? I mean, I know that, Don, I think, did you volunteer for the Marine Corps in 1960? Is that when you entered? Just tell us about your career in the Marine Corps.
Well, first, I'd like to say thank you to Diane for what she does. I've a little over a year been going to the Forever Young and what they do. It's really great. My story about the service can't even touch what Jim has done. But when I go to the Forever Young and they recognize each branch of the service, and everybody, if they're playing the Marine Corps hymn or what, you stand up, that pride comes back.
But our listeners, need to know here and now that you have been over the years exceptionally supportive of the Marine Corps and allied causes. Our listeners need to take note of your commitment. But go ahead, Don. Go ahead.
But again, Diane, thank you for what you do.
And
it's been an honor and a privilege to have met Jim Brown. We're in the Memphis Optimist Club together, and just to know what he's done, and he still serves the funerals for the veterans, and he's been a speaker at the wall for Vietnam, and so it's just been a great honor and privilege to have met Jim and to know him and as a friend. And on the little lighter side, I guess I was really fortunate in my time in the service. I did volunteer, and I went in, and I was reminded quite a few times by our drill instructor that I did volunteer. They didn't ask me. So I did go through Paris Allen, and it was had to fight sand fleas all the way. The sand fleas were terrible. Sand fleas are about the size of a gnat with hound dog teeth.
That's a good analogy. That's a good analogy.
That's a good mental picture there.
So I still don't know how our DI knew the difference between a male and a female sand flea. But he did. So. From there, Cuban conflict was going on. So while we were in Paris Island, we thought we were preparing for to head for Cuba. Went on from there to Camp Geiger for infantry training. From there, they sent me to staging at Camp Pendleton. And while at Camp Pendleton, we were on our way to Hawaii. Again, some tough duty. before we were within a few days of boarding ship, our group was coming from Hawaii to pick us up at Camp Pendleton. That's when Laos broke out. The people that went on to Laos said every day we woke up and we saw the sun, you know, coming up, and we woke up one morning and the sun was to our back. So they headed for Laos, and we wound up waiting to get to Hawaii. We finally got to Hawaii to Kaneohe Marine Corps Air Station, and there wasn't a soul on the base but the few of us guys that come in. At that time, I was dating my future wife, and the big thing that we did, she flew over for us to get married over there, and all of the guys that was left on the base, they donated $10 toward our wedding. And so they did that because the people that was in charge had invited all of the woman Marines from the base on the other side. But unfortunately, leaders caught wind of it and canceled their leave, and they couldn't go. Oof. So my wife and her matron were the only ladies at the wedding at Waikiki Beach. So while I was over there, Hawaii had just become a state, and from there we've gone through Laos. Well, then we had the missile crisis between Khrushchev and Kennedy. Didn't realize, because you know, on base they don't give you newspapers and you don't listen to. I mean, you just do what everybody tells you to do. And didn't realize we were within minutes of a nuclear war. So again, I was lucky and fortunate that I didn't get involved there. So And from there, I went back to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And my wife and kids, by that time, lived in base housing there. And they were fixing to send me on a six-month cruise, and I just got my family settled in. I called it a med cruise to go out. So driving down the highway onto the base, they had a sign up that said football tryouts. So I decided I didn't have anything to lose, so I went out for the football team. I made the fifth team, and so I wound up and worked my way up to the third team, and we went on road trips and all. But again, I was fortunate. I didn't have to go on a six-month med cruise. And the worst duty I had there, they used me as a blocking dummy. And so I got kicked around on that. But I did my 4 years and 3 months, and I would not trade it for anything in the world, the experience. And to have met people like Jim while I was in, I just am proud I did what I did. And feel guilty I wasn't in combat, but at the same time I'm glad I didn't have to. But again, Diane, thank you for all that you do. And
well, thank you,
Don. Thank you for your service.
Yes.
Because you volunteered, you served our country over 4 years. Our listeners need to observe that Don is being very modest about his days as a football player. He was an outstanding player at Catholic High School. That's very important for me to say because I'm a graduate of Christian Brothers High School, arch rivals. But
we had a little conflict back
then. There was a conflict. Thank you, Don, for your service.
Thank you.
I'll never forget what Omaha Beach D-Day vet Vince Rao said to me. He said, "I do not look down on them because they weren't in combat." He said, "You know, I went to Omaha Beach because that's where the government sent me." And he said, "They went where the military sent them." And he said, "But if their orders had been Omaha Beach, guess what? They would have been in Omaha Beach." And so he said, "I don't ever want anyone to think as a combat vet that I look down on them, because I don't." He said, "I'm very thankful that they did not have to go through what I did." So I just wanted you to know that you may feel that way, but they do not feel that way towards you at all. They appreciate what you've done.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you, Diane.
Well, we have done many trips. We started off, like I had mentioned, doing individual wishes. I'm going to just tell you a couple. For instance, we had a sailor who left baseball. He was playing for the minor league team of the St. Louis Cardinals, and he said Hitler was kicking up his heels, and he had to leave baseball. He was a pitcher, and so he never went back to baseball, that is. And so he said his dream was to throw out the first pitch for the St. Louis Cardinals. And he was 93 at the time. It took me a couple years to get the wish worked out. So he went to St. Louis with his two grandsons. He went in there, threw out the first pitch. They gave him a standing ovation, which meant so much to him. And they talked about him being a Navy sailor. Well, since he was a pitcher, he truly believed this. He called me on the way home, and he said to me, he goes, "I want you to know I did throw that ball 95 miles an hour. he really believed that. But
nobody should have corrected.
Doing individual wishes is so much fun because it's something in someone's heart that they really want to do. And so just being able to grant something like this for a veteran is just so gratifying. And so anyway, that was one of my favorites. We have been on approximately 45 trips. And how that started, I had a gentleman in Bartlett that said he wanted to go to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. And I said, "Okay, that's a great wish. Let me start working on it." And we had a Pearl Harbor survivor that had wanted to go back. His ship was still in the water. He was on the USS Utah, and it is still there. And so we sent this gentleman back with his wife, and it just changed his life. But I worked with the Navy there. I didn't go with them. I just sent them there, and then the Navy took over. And so I was going to do the same thing with this gentleman. So I was going to send this sailor and his wife to Washington, D.C., and I was going to get the Marines there to, because I had some connections with Marines, and they were going to take care of them in D.C. But then he started telling everyone about going to D.C., and I got bombarded with requests. And wouldn't you know it, the Commercial Appeal calls me, and they said, "We hear that you're taking World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. And I said, "Well, I am, but I don't even know how I'm going to do it yet." So I said, he said to me, he goes, "Well, do you mind if we do a story?" And I said, "Well, you can do a story, but I can only take two more." I had about eight on the trip at that time. And so they did the story, and I got 30 phone calls from veterans, World War II veterans going up to 100 years old. And I realized then that I couldn't ask an 100-year-old veteran to go alone. So I knew that I was looking at a very large trip. So I got a travel agency. We did our first trip in 2009, and we had about 55 people. We had about 35 veterans that went the first time, and the trip was absolutely perfect. And we saw so much healing take place in their lives. And so that's how it all began. I came back from that trip. They told their buddies we had 50 more. I just became a fundraiser right then. I just started raising money. And we'd go back to D.C., we'd have 50 more. Well, while I was on one of these trips, this gentleman, he was sitting behind me, and he said, "Diane, I have a wish." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "I want you to take me back to France." He was at Omaha Beach. And I laughed. And I thought, that's hilarious, because it's one thing taking 95-year-olds to D.C. It's another thing taking veterans out of the country. But it was meant to be. I had a gentleman that contacted me, and he said, "I hear that you are trying to take some D-Day vets back to Normandy." And I'm like, "How did you know that?" It was just crazy how the word gets out. And he handed me a check for $100,000. And he said, "You take our boys back to Normandy." And so I knew then that was my answer. So we went to Normandy in 2011, and the trip was just amazing. You know, it's one thing when you go to D.C., and it is a trip of honor, and we see their lives change. But taking them back to the beach that they stormed in 44, I mean, you just can't even express it. So we began at that point to see lives change. Going to Normandy, we've gone to Belgium. See, we've been to Normandy 8 times. We've been to Belgium, where the Battle of Bulge took place, 8 times as well. We've been to Italy and England. We've been to Pearl Harbor 4 times, and Washington, D.C., I've lost count. We've been so many times, probably 25.
Diane, are you planning future trips to Korea and Vietnam?
We are. It's interesting that you ask, because that's on the back burner right now. We have some huge trips coming up in 2019. We are going to the 75th anniversary of Normandy, and we are going to the 75th anniversary of Belgium, which are very big trips. These are going to be the last two trips that we take for our World War II veterans overseas. They're just getting too elderly to make these trips. So this is it. When we were there for the 70th, someone asked me about the 75th, and I said, "You know, I don't know if we'll have any World War II veterans that can travel. But if we only have one, I'll bring them back to Normandy. And right now we have 15 D-Day vets going to Normandy.
That's great. We've
already started working on Belgium. We've got quite a few Battle of Bulge guys too. But anyway, John, back to your question. So we are looking at going to Korea and Vietnam in 2020. So we are trying to get that worked out right now.
Thank you, Diane. Because I know, for example, Jim, being a combat veteran of Korea and Vietnam, Jim, also, I think our listeners, they may want to, when you served, of course, in Korea and your unit fought so bravely and you miraculously survived, and then obviously, ultimately, you ended up in Vietnam during that conflict. And naturally, when we think of Vietnam, we think of very high casualties, the North Vietnamese, the Viet Cong. But would you share with the listeners, I think you had a colleague that regrettably he lost his life in a very unusual way. I think the gentleman that was the mechanic, can you share that with our listeners?
But first let me make a comment for all veterans and all Americans. We have never won a war without the support of the home front. Each American has felt the pain and seen the hurt just as much as our combat veterans. Mm. And listen, the combat veterans could not have done what they did had it not been for the backup of those who weren't in combat.
Good point.
Very good point.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, okay, before you take an aircraft off, you had to check the intake. Your husband knows this. To make sure that there's no debris or anything in there. Now, when we was in Vietnam, one of the things they told you, do never just pull up and look in because you don't know what's in there. Well, this one young Marine did, and a cobra hit him right in the face. And, you know, he was dead almost instantly. But by the time you take in, within 5 or 10 minutes when you were getting ready to haul him out, his head was blown up. And those are just some instances like that that happen every day.
You know, those are the perils of combat in exotic, difficult terrain, hostile terrain. And again, we're just grateful to you for your sacrifice in Korea and Vietnam. And Don, you served our country over 4 years. And so like Diane said, I mean, you have the esteem and you have the honor of our citizens.
I wanted to also mention, Don had said something earlier about being a part of our group. We do have a monthly meeting at Germantown Baptist Church. And I started it really not just so we could have a meeting to honor military veterans, but when we would go on a trip, and you think about going to Normandy for a week. Well, you become very close with people on that trip. And we would come back and they would say, Diane, please have a reunion for us. And I'm like, are you kidding? When do I have time to do reunions? And so it was just a constant request from everyone. And it was so special, though, going on these trips and being together. I mean, I've had veterans, especially the World War II veterans, say, all my friends have passed away. And I go on a Forever Young trip, and I have 30 new friends. And they are going out to eat together and spend the night together. I mean, they're just buddies. It's been really special to see how much higher quality of life that they have. Well, because they were always requesting a reunion, I thought, how can I do this? Where they can be together, and it's just not a lot of work on me because I did do one reunion, and I go, I cannot do this. So I decided, let's have a monthly meeting. That way, when we go on a trip, the veterans from that trip can come to the meeting. They can see each other. Then, you know, the next trip, they can come and see each other. And so what has happened because of it, we have a very large meeting. We have over 200 in attendance every month. We meet the third Thursday of every month, and it's only 1 hour. I say it's 1 hour. That's really not true. The meeting is 1 hour. It starts from 10:30 to 11:30. The veterans come at 8. That's a joke, really. It is funny because when I first started the meeting, which was about 10 years ago, I started off making the coffee, and I would get there because it'd take the coffee a couple hours to brew. I would get there at 8, and I could not beat veterans there. They would already be there. So it was a joke. They wanted to make a day of it. But most of the vets come at 10, get a cup of coffee and a donut, visit. We have our meeting from 10:30 to 11:30. And then Germantown Baptist Church has been so kind to us. They have this awesome cook, and I call her Miss Cracker Barrel. And she makes this home-cooked food. And so we eat at 11:30. It's just $6. It's worth $6 because it's just so amazing. And then the vets stay and visit. They told us we could stay there all day. They did not care. They look at this as a ministry to our veterans. And what has happened in 10 years, we have become a family. And the craziest things happen at these meetings. Veterans that went to grade school together, hadn't seen each other in 70 years, and they reconnect. It's just amazing to watch the veterans get together and tell stories, and just their lives change. I just love this meeting. I never expected it to grow. We had 4 World War II veterans come just last week. Never been before.
Wow.
So the World War II veterans are still coming, and we have, it's World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. And we do have some of the younger guys come.
Yeah.
And it's really special.
Thank you, Diane. Dot, I know you attend these meetings with regularity. Would you like to comment about them?
Don't talk about the mistletoe now.
Okay.
Now, since you brought it up, I'll let you tell it, or either I'll tell it.
Maybe I better tell it. You never trust a Marine.
Yeah. That's true.
With the women, that is. Did I get you? No, what he's talking about, I think I better tell it because I really don't want a Marine telling this story. But I had mistletoe that I brought to our Christmas meeting. So when they walked in the door, of course, I used mistletoe on all of our male veterans. I think I even kissed a few of the lady veterans, but it was fun. It was shock on their face when they walked through the door and I had mistletoe.
Well, she not only had mistletoe, it was on a stick so she could reach out. And she was having a ball. So.
Can I say something about the Marines?
Go right ahead.
Well, I mean, we might as well get this out. We've honored Forever Young. We've honored thousands of veterans. And we have had the most trouble with the sailors and the Marines. I just want you to know. Are you surprised? Are you surprised?
Breaking news right there.
No surprise.
No surprise. Yeah. Now, this is a surprise to me. I thought that the Army soldiers would be rowdy,
yeah,
but they are not.
Yeah.
The Army and the Air Force, they're quiet, and
yeah,
they're gentlemen. And I hate to say that the sailors and that the Marines aren't gentlemen, but y'all are very spunky. I just want you to know, more a little on the wild side, but hey, it's fun. I can give you that.
Well, besides, I need to take up for the Marines.
I really don't think
it was their fault. It was just the boot camp that they never got over.
Turned every one of them.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Well, Jim, also the all of the Navy, don't they have webbed feet?
Yeah, that's so they can carry the Marines through the mud. So they don't get
Dan the brought through. That up at the last meeting, that we're always ragging each other about the Navy has webbed feet. You know,
yeah,
they talk about the Marines, and but we all served our country, and that's what we all have in common. And one branch really couldn't accomplish what
exactly
was accomplished without the other. So, and something else, you've had Boy Scout groups there. And to me, it's just great for these young kids to come in. And there's always a video that goes back in time and shows what this country is all about and the price that was paid. Mm-hmm. And the stories bring tears even to a Marine's eyes. And I encourage anyone to come to that, and especially if you have schools, get the young people there just to let them see what this country is founded on. And
it is really important. You know, Coach Rock with the baseball team, the University of Memphis, mm-hmm. he brings his baseball team every December. And these are 19-year-old boys, ages of the guys that were storming the beaches in World War II. And so they came up front. I wanted everyone to see them. And they had it on their uniforms, and we were talking about it. And so I said to at this time, this was at the beginning when I did this, and so it was mostly World War II veterans. So I said, I want you to tell these baseball players who won the war, which branch. Don't ever do that. I mean, let me tell you.
Yeah, they're still talking.
So immediately a CB jumped up and he goes, the CB's won the war. And by the way, CBs are feisty. I did not know that, but they are. And he said, you know, the Army couldn't have done anything without us. We were building roads and bridges. And he goes, and we did build a few swimming pools for the officers. And then the sailor jumped up and he goes, the Navy won the war. The CBs couldn't have gotten anywhere without us. No one could have. We were taking tanks and troops and, you know, we did it all. We took everyone everywhere. The Navy won the war. So then here comes the Marine. He jumps up and you know, they're shaking their fist in the air. Yeah. And he said, the Marines won the war because we're the best fighters in the world. And I said, that's what I've heard. And then this guy, he stands up, he goes, I won the war. And I went, wow, that's a pretty bold statement. I said, what did you do to win the war? He said, I was a cook. So I guess he did win the war. He kept everyone alive.
One can't do without the other. That's
exactly.
That's for sure. So, yeah.
So you have these meetings once a month. You also have an annual fundraiser, though, too. Tell
we
us
do.
A little bit about that.
We have several 5Ks and some little things like that, which one was a Boy Scout that started. Okay. He did it as his Eagle Scout project, and he's just continuing to do it. So what a blessing he has been to our veterans. But we do have a gala. It's going to be on the 10th of August this year. It's at the Hilton, Memphis Hilton. And it's a live auction, silent auction, and we have big band music and just honor our veterans, and we show videos of the trips that we've done. It's very, very special. The people love it. The veterans love it. And so this year, in 2019, we will be showing our videos from Normandy and Belgium.
Wow. Okay. And so that fundraiser is one way the public can help, but are there other ways they can get involved? How can vets that aren't part of this, how can they get involved with this?
Well, we do have a website. I know a lot of our older vets don't use websites, but their children do, or they could always call me. Our website is Forever Young Vets, that's VETS.org. And my phone number is 901-299-7516. And you can call me, and we would love for our veterans to get involved, even if they don't do anything but attend the monthly meeting. Right. They love this meeting. I had a wife tell me, she said, do you know we were supposed to go to Michigan, and when my husband realized it was going to be gone the third Thursday, he refused to go. So I know it's really making a difference in their lives.
Right,
Diane, sure. May I say for our listeners, Don, I want to expand your comment regarding the organization of these monthly meetings. Diane impresses me as a wonderful producer. They are entertaining, they are informative, they are very funny, they're very appealing, and I strongly encourage all veterans to attend these meetings because it is fun, it's inspirational, it's entertaining, And I believe all the veterans just have a great time.
They do. My goal is for when they walk out the door, I want them to be proud that they're Americans and proud that they served. And I think that we accomplished that because I have people tell me, you know what you need on the tables? Kleenex. That's what you need because we cry every time. I'm not trying to make people cry. But we do have very meaningful videos and music, right. And so it meets a great need.
Yeah, and we'll link to all of these, the websites and everything on the show notes. So we'll do that, and also we'll start tweeting and let everybody know about when these events happen and stuff. So I think that about wraps us up. John, you have anything else?
Mark, thank you. I would like to ask Diane, because she has been the inspiration, the spirit behind this organization, and has done a wonderful job. Would you share with us what is your driving force, your motivating philosophy regarding your organization?
Well, first of all, my father was a World War II and Korean War veteran. And one thing he instilled in me was to love America. He was so patriotic, and he taught me to love this country. And not only love this country, but to love our veterans. So every time I look into the face of one of our veterans, I see my dad, I see my uncles who, they also fought in World War II in Korea. And I want to give back to them. Because they deserve it. They deserve this so much. And when I see healing take place in their lives, and it's not just that I see it, family members tell me, when my dad comes back from a trip, he's a different man. I mean, we've seen families healed from going on these trips. And that is my driving force now, is because I know the difference it can make in their lives. And it gives so many of them hope and a reason to continue. We just went to Washington, D.C. You're going to laugh. We had a 102-year-old veteran, World War II veteran. He's going to Normandy with us. He's 102.
Right.
He stood up and he said, "Forever Young has given me a new lease on life." He's 102 and he's got a new lease on life. Don't you just love it? That is so sweet.
Yes.
And we were going to England, and one of our D-Day vets, he got very ill. And so the doctor went in there and he said, "You know, I think we're just going to put you on hospice because he's 98 years old." And he said, "Get out of here, Dr. Death. I'm going to England." And so the doctor came back in a little bit later, and he goes, no, seriously, we're going to put you on hospice. And he goes, "No, get out of here. Hey, y'all get Dr. Death out of here. I'm going to England." And do you know, he went to England, and he did awesome. And he's going with us for the 75th of Normandy.
He's alive.
God bless him.
He's alive, and he is doing awesome. So when you see things like that, I say these trips are addictive. When you see people's lives change, you just want more and more of it.
Yeah.
And it can be very tiring raising money. It's hard work. But when you are with these men and you can give back to them, it's worth it all. And I say, my sacrifice is nothing compared to their sacrifice. And it's just an honor and a privilege to do this for them.
Wow, that's very well said.
Let me, one other thing that you do, you're always recognizing their birthdays.
Oh.
And one by one, she goes around and asks, "Who's 95? And you're surprised who stands up, and then who's 100? And there's usually a couple there that are 100 plus, and she'll recognize each one and give them the time for them to tell what branch. And she's just an amazing lady with all she does there.
Thank you. I'm not getting the mistletoe out for you, Dawn, so just forget it.
My brother has traveled with Diane's group, And my brother, of course, is a writer. He's written books about the Second World War. And here's the way he describes Diane and her organization, what she has done for us and for the future. Living history. Jim, you are living history. Don, you are living history. And what you have done for these men, the Second World War, Korea, and Vietnam. My brother says when you see these men and women, they are living history. You know, you can study history books, you study articles, but these men and women sacrificed and fought for our country. I stand with Don and with Jim and everyone here. We applaud you, Diane. It's
Thank
wonderful
you.
What you've done.
She has done more than any one single person.
Aww.
Excuse me for interrupting.
Jim.
For keeping the spirit of America alive
Thank
and patriotism.
You.
And you cannot go to one of her Thursday meetings without feeling it and understanding it. Thank you, Diane.
Well,
thank you, Diane.
Well, I really do that for my dad and uncles. Now that I'm older and I work with the veterans, I can look back and see that my dad and my uncle had combat stress. But you don't recognize that when you're a child.
Right.
But now I see how much they really suffered. Mm-hmm. And both of them have passed away before I started Forever Young, so they never even got to see what I'm doing it, but I'm doing it for them.
Yeah. Well, I know that all of the vets appreciate everything that you're doing for them. This episode has been an honor to meet both of you guys, and Diane, also
thank
you. Thank you for your service, both of you, my family, our listeners, and personally, thank you very much for what you've done.
Thank you
for everything you've done. We will be linking to everything that we talked about in the show notes. We'll get the bios up, and if you've got, you're going to need to sit down with a cup of coffee for the bios because they are quite lengthy. We've got some great things that these two men have done, and I'm going to put all of those in the show notes. So that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Our Memphis History. Make sure to check us out on Twitter and on Instagram. You can always find us at ourmemphishistory.com. Please check back soon for another episode. Thanks for listening.